Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. 18 years ago, genetically modified crops were introduced in the U.S. First there were tomatoes, then soybeans, potatoes, and corn. As the years have passed, more and more farmland has been devoted to these plants, which have a gene added to their DNA, giving them helpful traits like pesticide resistance. During that same time period, a growing number of children have developed allergies to food. Despite assurances of safety from biotech companies and government agencies, the timing has raised suspicion. Harvest Public Media's Camille Phillips checked out the research.
At this grocery store in Liberty, Missouri, some people are reading labels because they're counting calories or want to eat healthier. But Jenny Giles has another more important reason to read labels. She has to avoid buying things that could harm her daughter, Avery.
It says no protein.
Yeah. Well, those are all right for you. It has allergen information right there. If you want to get those banana pops, I'll let you.
10-year-old Avery Giles is highly allergic to peanuts. Eating a peanut could cause her throat to swell up, put her in a coma, or even kill her.
I get really scared sometimes from the ambulance and shots.
A food allergy like Avery's used to be pretty rare, but it's becoming more common. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the prevalence of children with food allergies rose 18% between 1997 and 2007. It may be that more people report that their children have food allergies today because they're more aware of the possibility. Or perhaps, as some argue, more children in the United States develop food allergies now because children are less exposed to germs and allergens. But others point out that the first genetically modified food hit grocery store shelves in the mid-90s. That means today's children and teenagers have been eating genetically modified food all their lives, in steadily increasing proportions. Just because the timing coincides, though, does not necessarily mean eating genetically modified food caused the rise, says Rick Goodman. He is a food science and technology professor at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
We have to kind of look at our whole world, the whole context.
Goodman's specialty is assessing the risk of allergens in genetically modified products, a skill he developed working for the biotech giant Monsanto. St. Louis-based Monsanto makes some of the most popular genetically modified products on the market, including Roundup Ready soybeans and corn. At his lab on the University of Nebraska-Lincoln campus, Goodman explains the steps he takes to test the likelihood that products may cause an allergic reaction.
You put these little strips in here, and they're soaked in the extract of soybean.
First, the protein created by the added gene is isolated. Then that protein is tested on a serum made from the antibodies of people allergic to similar proteins. According to Goodman, this process is similar enough to determine whether a genetically modified product is at risk of causing allergic reactions.
Under the current system and products that are available, there's really no concern for a health impact from genetically modified crops.
But Jeffrey Smith disagrees. Smith is a longtime critic of genetically modified food who has made it his mission to expose the dangers he believes they pose and get the products removed from the food supply.
The process of genetic engineering can cause hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA, and up to 5% of the existing natural genes can change their levels of expression. And these are not evaluated in the superficial studies that are being done before the crops get on the market as food.
Smith gets some of his information from published studies, but much of it comes from personal communication with scientists. He acknowledges that there's not a lot of conclusive research yet, but he thinks initial findings are worrisome enough to merit further study. Many of the studies Smith does reference are animal studies because there are few human studies.
And we know that animals consistently react to GMOs when their immune system is tested in a competent way in laboratories.
But according to Goodman, current animal studies only predict human reactions half the time. And he says testing people for allergic reactions can be dangerous and complicated, which is why researchers use human antibodies in pre-market tests. As for studies on people eating genetically modified food already on the market, Goodman says those are too hard to control.
And we don't know who ate Roundup Ready soybeans versus quote-unquote conventional soybeans. So how can you make a correlation, and how do you study a population?
It's fairly safe to say that most everyone in the United States has eaten genetically modified soybeans. For the past 5 years, more than 90% of the U.S. soybean crop has been genetically engineered. And soy can be found in a lot of different types of food, especially processed food. Everything from breads and pasta to meat and dairy. If genetically modified food were labeled, then maybe scientists could keep track and these types of studies would be more feasible. Labeling is one of activist Smith's primary goals. He thinks labeling genetically modified food will lead to customers rebelling against the technology. At a restaurant in Lee's Summit, Missouri, however, three members of a support group for parents of highly allergic children see another problem.
I don't see that there would be much left to buy. And I'm already so limited, I'd be like, yeah.
Labels on genetically modified food could soon be put to the test. A ballot initiative to require labeling will be voted on in California come November. I'm Camille Phillips for Harvest Public Media.
For teenagers, the way they cope with problems, along with their personality, could predict how they might behave in general. That's according to a new study out of the University of Missouri. Gustavo Carlo is a professor in the MU Department of Development and Family Studies and was one of the study's authors. In the study, Carlo wanted to find out what it was that led teenagers to act aggressively versus pro-socially, or rather, in a way that would actually benefit others. And he says he wanted to find out which was more important in shaping behavior, their personality or the way they coped with problems.
Which comes first? Is it our personalities that influences the way we cope with things, or is it the way we cope with things that is influencing our personalities?
To find out, Carlo surveyed more than 1,500 teenagers in Spain using measures of empathy, emotional instability, coping strategy, and behavior. What he found was that teenagers who were more emotionally unstable tended to use emotion-focused coping strategies. These are strategies like venting or avoidance that try to improve a psychological state. Empathetic teenagers, on the other hand, used more problem-focused strategies that dealt with the source of the problem. For example, they might study for a test rather than avoid it. Carlos says there's a link between empathy and problem-focused coping.
When they see someone that is in distress or is hurt, they're able to regulate their own emotion pretty effectively. And by doing so, they may be more likely to be able to think clearly about what to do about the situation. Whereas individuals who are emotionally unstable, they may be really trying to manage their own emotions in those kinds of situations, but can't seem to get further than that.
What's more, Carlos says that both personality and coping style influenced each other equally. He says the study could help researchers design better behavioral intervention programs for teens. And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder that you can listen to this program and others by visiting our website, kbia.org.